Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
It's time to welcome back an oldie but goodie. Well, not so old, really. She's done wonderful things since leaving the University of Lincoln. She's now based in York, of course. It's the return of Katie Dorr. How are you, Katie?
I'm really well, thanks, Alex. It's lovely to be back.
Marvellous. Yes, well, there we are. You see, you might move out of Lincoln, but at the end of the day, the Siren Radio studio, it's like a kind of general connection that still brings you back, even though you're based in York and you've actually opened up a whole new career as an artiste, I believe.
Planning on opening up a whole new career as an artist, painting away, getting ready to sort of start selling things. But lots of painting going on.
Makes perfect sense. Well, another general artist extraordinaire, of course, is our ACE BAFTA award-winning director and indeed director of many of your favourite episodes of Doctor Who, of course, Katie. It's the wonderful Graham Harper. How are you, Graham?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Yeah, pleased to be here as well.
Yes, and then you've actually shifted your backdrop slightly, Graham, because I see we've got a rocket ship behind you there in all sorts of ways. Is this a new look, really, for a Thursday evening?
It's my Hugo Award.
Yeah, this is it. You see, this is the whole thing. One of the most prestigious awards you could actually have with respect to the science fiction community, named, of course, not after Victor Hugo, as in Les Miserables, but after Hugo Gernsback, the famous science fiction publisher who really coined the term scientific fiction, etc. And of course, Graham, you are the proud recipient and receiver of the Hugo Award for your work on Doctor Who, I believe.
I was really surprised to get it. It was really good. Very flattered. Didn't get to go to Australia to get it, though.
Well, look, the World Science Fiction Convention goes around the country, or sometimes it just exists in a virtual sense, but clearly they should have flown you out there, but never mind. At least it's there, and it's proudly displayed in your Acton home, which is wonderful.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So we're waiting, hopefully, to be joined in a few moments by Patricia Tallman from Hawaii. All should be well from that point of view. I know the time slots are slightly different. She is over there now, obviously shifted over from Los Angeles. But Graham, what are your thoughts now in terms of the COVID situation? How are you coping with it? You've had both your vaccinations. You're still here. Do you think there's a brave new world forthcoming, or is it a case of no, we want COVID 20, 21, 22 and 23?
No, we don't know. We don't want that. I think we're being very cautious, Bernadette, my wife, and I. I mean, we're still we're dying to get to France, and we're not sure whether in June, is it May or May? I think it's May that they're going to announce whether we can go abroad or not and which countries we can go to. And I'm hoping we can get to France. I don't see this going away very quickly at all.
Yeah, and obviously you could then obviously Zoom from France. It has been done before. We can work our way through all sorts of things. Yeah. Katie, how have you found the whole experience of the last, 14 months now that we've been having this fun experience?
It's been surreal. As well as doing the painting, I started working in a shop. So I've been furloughed for more than 6 months out of the last 12. And if you'd said to me a few years ago, we'll pay you to have 6 months off, I'd have said, oh, that's great. But it's not like that at all. And it's made us all realise how much we need and love human contact.
Yeah, well, you know, talking about that, we're moving in all sorts of ways because the next generation, of course, of Midweek Drivettes is with us now, represented by the awesomely talented Rebecca Bond. How are you, Rebecca?
Hello, very well, thank you. How is everyone?
Well, we're okay, Rebecca. And currently, of course, you are in Lincoln. In fact, we are back to Lincoln this year because obviously we were thinking we'd be back there, but obviously we're not. I might drop back in all time or whatever. So for the benefit of Katie, who used to actually be one of our key participants, not only in the Midweek Drive, but also used to be PA to Jason Whittaker, of course, your dissertation tutor.
Amazing.
You can grill her about all sorts of things about Jason. It's our kind of backup plan in the event of Patricia Tallman not sort of being around. But what basically would you like to sort of share with Graham and Katie about life in Lincoln now you've returned and the Christmas tree has actually gone?
It's really lovely. I mean, luckily my housemate got here before me and she took it down for me, which was really nice. So I didn't have to worry about taking down the Christmas tree. That was going to be a task. But it's really lovely. I knew I missed it anyway, but I think really coming back and, you know, having my house back and, you know, having Lincoln back, I really love the town and just everything about it. So being back has been really, really lovely, even though I knew I would have missed it anyway. So going to make the most of it while I can. But I am missing being in uni all the time. So. You know.
There we have it. So, Katie, would you like to throw any questions to either Rebecca or Graham at this moment in time? Whilst I might just drop an email to Patricia and say, "Oi, what time is yoga? Have you got in Hawaii?
Wake up!"
You know? So true. Over to you, Katie.
So, aside from trying to keep sane amid a global pandemic, what exciting things have you guys got going on at the moment?
Ooh,
I mean, can we get more exciting, actually, Katie, just bursting in on that thing, than actually going live to Hawaii to see the awesomely talented Patricia Tolman back on the Madrid Drive? Patricia, welcome back to the Madrid Drive. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm in Hawaii. How bad could it be? You know, huh?
Hawaii?
Yes, I'm house sitting for a friend in Hawaii.
Cool.
It's a look tough call.
Look at you, Graham, all bundled up. You're all...
Yeah, that's why we're wishing we could be in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, I wish you could be too.
Now, Patricia, we're on the same planet, and these days that's enough of a miracle, let's face it. So, yeah, at least we look at that basis. Rebecca and Graham, we've obviously spoken to before, but Katie Dorr is a huge, and I mean H-U-G-E, huge, Babylon 5 fan. When she realized you were on the show, she was beside herself with excitement and joy. She's a keen artist as well. Katie, as you said, Babylon 5 seared into your soul. So now you've got the chance to actually speak to the awesome incarnation of Lita Alexander. Over to you, Katie.
Oh my God. I mean, it's the chance to just say a massive thank you. My boyfriend and I, he's never seen Babylon 5 before, and I have spent the past...
Owen Clayton, what's going on in that house, honestly?
He's seen it now. And it was only sort of rewatching it together, me rewatching it, him watching it for the first time, that I realised just how ahead of its time it was. And there's a scene with Lita and Delenn and Ivanova on the bridge of the White Star, looking for Sheridan at Zaha Doom, and it's all these amazing women driving the story, and it's their story, and I think it just the depth and development, and you know, I was a teenager watching B5, and I didn't realize until now how incredibly lucky I was to grow up with these amazing women to watch on screen at the time. And yeah, it's only sort of now, you know, in my late 30s that I realized just how much impact it had on me and how blooming grateful I am to have, you know, as a teenager, to have had these women in my life, you know.
Wow, that's so much. Thank you for saying that, because, yeah, I didn't have those role models the same way, you know, with occasional breakout female character that would be strong, but mostly we're making it up as we go along. It was, Joe did a great job of writing his women very strong, which was fantastic. And Mira, Claudia and I stayed dear friends. Still are. Mira, of course, just passed away, but yeah, we do kind of look back at that and say that was our only scene together after all those years, and it was only we finally got to do something together. But thank you, Katie, for saying that. That means a lot. Really does.
Oh, well, it meant a huge amount to me.
I like to feel like Katie has kind of gone through the notion of science fiction approaches solidly. I mean, she's taken a midweek drive tests and has passed them, usually with flying colours, Patricia. So it's good to actually connect on that basis. So since last we spoke, Patricia, obviously you've temporarily vacated Los Angeles. I still say that, of course, the best book of the year is Pleasure Thresholds. There we are, 2020.
Thank you.
It's important, you know, working through that. And I was intrigued by your shot on contact lenses. You weren't a fan of contact lenses in Babylon 5, were you?
No. Well, these were really special contact lenses. Those big black ones, they were designed to cover the inner and outer corner of the eye as well. Yeah. So they're not just the little tiny, you know, contacts that you put over your iris. These were like the size of a DVD. That's what it felt like. It was like they jammed these things into my face. And we had maybe, you know, 15 seconds before my eyes would just, tears would just fly out of my face because I had no control over that at all. So we would wait till the very last second. Then as soon as camera was all set up, the special effects guys would jump on me, hold me down, cram these things into my face. And then we would start shooting really fast because I'm about to like explode. And the makeup lady had to redo my makeup every time. And it was not fun.
That doesn't help you act, does it?
No. I mean, that's all you're thinking about is saying the words really fast. Get it out quick before so we can get the scene, you know. He said it would only happen once. And of course, I ended up wearing them like 5 times. And they were never suffering. Designed by eyes. These were just like a standard special effect lens that wasn't sized for me or anything like that. Oh, it's gross.
It gives a whole new meaning to the term suffering for your art is all I can actually say. You see, Graham, that's one of the reasons we started off by actually talking about your Hugo Award, which is actually behind Graham. You can see Graham's Hugo Award, which he received for directing Doctor Who. I think, Patricia, you deserve a double Hugo Award for actually sort of just going through that alone. You know,
if only we had a Hugo for suffering, we would all, you know, that would be it. Yeah.
Okay, let's move to Rebecca.
Congratulations, Graham, by the way. Well deserved.
Oh, thank you.
There we are. One of these days, Graham, I'm sure you will be able to cast Patricia Tolman in the Graham Harper Western epic. It'll happen.
You're going to be in it, Patricia, I promise you. Can I have... Will an Englishman ever make a Western? Will we be able to sell a Western to the Americans? I don't think so. Audacious.
I don't know. Well, it's audacious, but sometimes the most audacious plans are the best because it takes them by surprise and they don't expect it. And then they go, well, why not? You know?
You've got wind.
I know. Suddenly had a breeze. Yeah.
It's sound effects. It's wind. It's everything. I mean, it's just, you know, Zoom just lifts us to a whole new level. Oh, truly, genuinely. I mean, before you know where you are, you'll be sort of saying you've got wind in North Carolina as well. Isn't that right, Jessica Burtis?
Yes. It's the weather here is so crazy right now. It's like snowing yesterday. I don't know what's happening. Mother Nature's side. Yeah. I know.
This is reaching out across the world, Patricia. You know, Graham's got his winter woolies on. He's based in London. Rebecca's in Norwich, where all's well with the world. Katie's in York, just generally chilling out, etc. And Jessica got snow. You're in Hawaii. It just shows, you know, it's a strange world, but still.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Zoom right now, I guess, huh?
Well, it's certainly helping us to connect. Rebecca, any questions you'd like to put to Patricia or indeed the team at present?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, Patricia, I was watching one of your streams, not live, unfortunately, I didn't make it, but I was watching it back this week, and I saw that you do watch parties, and I didn't know you did that. Where did the idea for that come from? Because that seems really fun.
Well, people, I try to do what I'm told. So not true. But I will take suggestions, and the fans have talked about it, and then I have my own little team of people that are helping me with the online events and sort of see what's the best thing to do. And they, JP, who is running the page at the time, says he likes to do a lot of watch parties. Would I consider that? I said, well, of course, that's a great idea. And Facebook had just started a new way of doing a watch party on Facebook. So that's why we were able to do it right there.
A watch party?
You actually put on an episode of a show or a film, and it has to be in Facebook's approved list. I'm not sure what that's about. Control issues, you know. And once you get it, you can put it on live, and you can participate, you know, in the chat and stuff and talk.
It's a lovely idea. I love it. I mean, I'd love to join one. And do you choose which you want to watch, or is that a sort of collaborative thing? Do people comment what they want to watch? Or...
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's very collaborative. And we did one that had Andrea Thompson's character in it because we wanted to, because she was coming up to do a B5 event. And yeah, we did a, Billy Butler and I did a Night of Living Dead watch party, but we did that on Zoom, and we sent out a link so that we could talk while the film was going, which you cannot do on Facebook.
Control issues, Pat. Control issues.
I know. But it is fun. It's fun to. I'm surprised at how many fans will join us and like doing it, and I'm really honored. So, yeah. And then they
sounds really fun. I'll have to join one at some point.
Yeah.
A really good idea.
It's fun. It is totally fun. You get some behind the scenes too. You get to hear
stories
back in the day. Yeah. Now that we're further and further out, we talk more and more about it because there's less repercussions.
That's true.
and to think, I'm sure it was just Graham and myself who thought, a watch party, is that where you actually look at clocks and find time in different places? Like, oh, I've got one heck of a good watch here. It's amazing. It kind of, you know, like chronological heaven, really. It's great stuff. I know. So what the hey? I mean, Katie, have you taken part in a watch party?
I haven't, but I want to because it sounds fabulous. One of the problems I've had rewatching with somebody who hadn't ever seen B5 before was having to sit and be really quiet and not give anything away. I'm saying
Owen Clayton is spending too much time dealing with homeless people in the United States and various other things. They are important, but unfortunately, Babylon.
But he hadn't seen B5. What are you doing with his life?
Right.
But I fixed that.
Jessica, question for yourself. Anybody you'd like to bowl one out to at this particular stage? In fact, have you been to Hawaii, Jessica?
So I actually, when I was in my freshman year at school, my family all went to Hawaii and I couldn't go because I had an exam. So I would have gotten a zero if I'd gone. So,
oh no!
Yeah, my family all went, but I stayed here. Yeah. So it was a lot less glamorous, I think, than Hawaii.
On the plus factor, though, Jessica, you did actually want to get to sleep rough on the USS Yorktown. So that's all good, isn't it, really? You know?
I'm not sure how that compares, but...
It doesn't.
Just trying to offset the balance here. Anyway, over to you, Jess. What questions would you like to put to the team?
I'm super curious. Has anyone asked you how, like, the activity is in Hawaii at the moment, like, with the COVID restrictions, if you're able to kind of get out, go to the beach or anything?
We had to do, we got vaccinated, and we also had to do tests before you get on the plane, and then you had to have the results in time, so it was within this, like, 72-hour window, and then when you land, they do another test. We had to fill out a lot of paperwork online and get approved, and if you did all right all through that, I mean, the Army is actually in the airport holding a temperature gun to your head, which is a little weird, but okay, get it, I got it. And then if you do not pass, you have to self-quarantine at one of their approved hotels for 10 days, which can be very pricey. Luckily, all is good for us, so there was a little song and dance to getting here, but now that we're here, people are wearing masks outside. They're even if you're just relaxing on the beach, a lot of people still have masks on. If you go in the water, of course, that's you take it off. But social distancing is required, so you have to space out wherever you are. It's not very crowded right now because of all of these things, I'm sure. So and I'm house sitting, so I've got plenty of space. I don't have to. We can cook at home and all of that. So
that's good.
See, I mean, to me, I just think, what would Steve McGarrett have actually made about all that? You know, what would Lord in his heyday? You know, what would he have actually done? I mean, it's all very well saying the remake was there, but ultimately, there's only one classic Hawaii 5-0 series.
Oh man,
you're such a kid, aren't you?
One of these days we'll have the ultimate mashup and we'll have Lita Alexander's character going through a time warp and ending up in the Hawaii 5-0 series of Steve McGarrett.
What a blast. It would be so fun. Yeah, anyway, I love it.
Graham, over to you. What questions would you like to throw to the assembled?
So if we have time, I've got two questions, Patricia. One is that last time when I checked you out, I saw that you
were saying like you co-hosted with Patricia as opposed to checked her out. I mean, for goodness sake, she's an great driver.
I mean, I did some homework beforehand. Yeah. Is what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I read that you sang with your father on the radio, A Bicycle Made for Two, and I thought every time, if you watch it, every time you see 2001 A Space Odyssey, HAL 2000 sings as he's dying, Daisy, Daisy, what, blah, blah, blah. He sings Bicycle Made for Two. And I just wondered, when you saw that, what it made you think?
Oh, that's such a great, no one's ever asked me that question before. That's a very, very interesting question. I was kind of terrified by the whole movie when I saw it. When it first came out, I just thought the whole movie was as creepy as can be and scary. And of course, that was, yeah, what? Somehow being sucked into the film, like, this is, oh my God. Yeah, that was, it was just incredibly creepy.
Open the pod
bay doors. That's not a terribly elaborate answer. I'm sorry, Sid.
Open the pod bay doors, Pat. Open the pod bay doors.
Come on, open. Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, I asked the question not because I really thought you'd be, it would take you back to when you were 2 years old, but the thought that you were 2 years old singing with your dad on radio is wonderful. That is a really nice young beginning.
I guess he had a big, you know, he had a guest nut show up or something. So I do remember standing on the desk with the microphone. I was so little. They had me stand on the desk with the microphone. And in the way of children, you know, that are completely unselfconscious, just sang my song, you know.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah. And now, and then, of course, my parents used that as a point of embarrassment for the rest of my life.
when I became a director, one of the things that I in casting that I absolutely love was when young actors, young up and coming actors, I would always say to them, "So, have you done? What have you been doing? Blah blah blah." Mm-hmm. And I'd also ask them, "So, what theatre have you done?" And those that had done, you know, gone out to do what you call summer stock. Or stock theatre. I used to love it. They were very, very special to me because they had something very special. To play in the theatre is quite an art and is brilliant to have an actor who knows and also knows how to bring the range down when he's or he or she are on television or making a film or whatever. And I just wondered, so you did a lot of stock, which I thought was brilliant. Through your university time, as well as obviously afterwards, what were the best parts? What's the best part you had in theatre? Oh, what do you remember the best?
I'd say Rosalind and As You Like It was my I was terrified, and I remember, you know, just you have so much to do. You're on stage all the time, you know, and just these words, these beautiful words, and such a responsibility. This was with the Riverside Shakespeare Company in New York City. And I mean, it was such a blur of experience, but really one of the most gratifying moments I've ever had as an actor, just the fact that I did it. Not that I did it particularly well, but that I did it.
Right?
Well, it was, I guess you're talking about young actors too. And there is something about being kind of young and inexperienced and not knowing that you shouldn't be able to do a thing, you know, and you just do it. And there is that blessing of being young and having energy and just the willingness to throw yourself off a cliff.
But we said, step away from the stunt work, Pat, you know, we'll move away.
And what was the worst part? What was the part that you will never want to do again?
I did burlesque. It was in New York City, and mostly I kept my clothes on, but it was kind of a desperate way to make some money. And I knew some of the people who created the show, and they had put it to me in a way that made me feel like it was okay. But the reality was there was nudity. It wasn't me, but there was nudity.
Patricia, in many ways, at the end of my academic career, I'll probably actually entitle my memoir, "Mostly I Kept My Clothes On." You know, that's pretty much it.
Mostly I Kept My Clothes On!
I think you should call it burlesque.
No. No, I use the other one. But you mentioned, obviously, Rosamund there, and of course, we are literally on the eve of Shakespeare's birthday. Tomorrow, it's another one of the Patricia Tallman alumni that you've recommended to us. Of course, Armin Shimerman is joining us to actually celebrate the Shakespearean line from that. I mean, clearly he still resonates as a playwright, as an actor, and so on. Is it something that you think, from the acting perspective, you really, you know, just working your way through a Shakespearean play is just so useful in so many ways to build the technique and more?
And more. You know, there's so many levels to it. And as an American, you know, Shakespeare is... it's almost like, how dare you? How dare you? You could do Shakespeare, you know? But it went in college, Shakespeare, we were taught Shakespeare and we got to go through Shakespeare and it made him more of a friend and a mentor, if you will, like a past, in the past. And his words carry you along. You know, if you have the wherewithal or a wonderful teacher who can show you just how to read Shakespeare and because it's all right there, you know.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
It feels so good, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel so good just to speak those words?
I hated Shakespeare.
Did you?
I absolutely loathed it. At drama school, I didn't understand really what I was doing. I didn't understand. And then gradually, when you see the great actors, the Old Vic or National Theatre, are there. When you see somebody like Vanessa Redgrave, she made me understand everything about what she was talking about. It was wonderful.
I think that's the key, Graham, is to have, whether it's a teacher in a class or you're on stage, somebody that shows you the way. I was so blessed back in the day. This is in the early 80s in New York City. Derek Jacobi and Sinead, what's her name? Oh,
Cusack.
Cusack. Oh, yeah. God, sorry. They did a couple of shows in rep. They did... but they did Beatrice and Benedict, you know, and you could get $10 seats in those days. But it was in folding chairs in the front row where the orchestra would have been. So they put all of us, you know, paupers in the front in little folding chairs looking up.
Brilliant.
It was brilliant. And I watched them and it was like a revelation, like you were saying, to watch Vanessa Redgrave. I never had that pleasure in life, but I did have Derek Jacobi and Sinead Cusack, and they make it effortless, and the words are so beautiful, and you get caught up in this emotion, you get caught up in the humor and the drama, the behind the scenes, you see what's about to happen, and heartbreaking and funny, and but you can't see any technique, right? I really could see when an actor was doing it wrong, it's obvious, but when someone's doing it so right, you can't even see it. It's just part of who they are, right? It flows out. Yeah. They're in character completely. Oh, and they did Cyrano de Bergerac as well. You can't see it. You're just experiencing it. You forget that they're actors and this is only a play and you're having this amazing journey. So,
it's a bit like the journey you took Katie Daw on through your Babylon 5 incarnations. That's for sure.
I'd be so honored if it were half that impactful. Tell you what,
Although I must admit, in terms of intriguing casting, Graham, I mean, having worked with Derek Jacobi, certainly Derek Jacobi and Sinead O'Connor will be an interesting mix, certainly, in terms of that initial line.
Sinead Cusack.
It was Cusack. he is. Do you know what surprised me about him when you work with him is he's naughty. He's a very naughty bloke.
Expound.
Gossip. He will tell you if you say... For example, if I'd said to him, I didn't, but if I said to him, so what was it like playing with so-and-so, a particular actor or actress, he would then do a little, and you'd hear this very, very naughty story that he should not, he was not very discreet. It was wonderful, very funny.
It's wonderful,
very nice.
I know exactly. What was the Dorothy Parker quote? If you've got nothing nice to say about someone, sit next to me.
But he was funny. He was delightful. I did a scene with him. Well, I didn't do the scene, but he did a scene where he's a very nice, gentle old professor type character, and the idea was that you knew something was odd about the character, and the camera gently drifts right in. He's standing with his back to us, and the camera just drifts slowly right into his face. Well, the back of his neck, in fact, And as it, the camera, I don't even know how he did this, but as he, as the camera got really close to him on the track, he knew the timing. He knew exactly where the camera was, and he turns. And when he turned, his eyes were black. His pupils went black. I think he's got brown eyes. They went black. And
was
I don't know how he did that.
Contact lenses, Graham.
This was without contact lenses, yes.
Wow.
Well, do you know what? I don't know. Maybe he did. I was there, so I know he didn't.
Right.
It was extraordinary. He has a fantastic presence and talent. And yet, the second before you started that, he would be telling one of his silly stories. I found it extraordinary.
Oh, my God.
Could turn it on.
Mm. Amazing. Casey, I remember seeing him. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So any questions you'd like to throw into the mix?
Oh, I think I know the scene that Graham's talking about, and it's by bizarre coincidence, it actually came up on Facebook on the Doctor Who page this morning with YANA, with You Are Not Alone as like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like the scene of the day that they were sharing. And yeah, it is that kind of it really comes across that he just sort of metamorphosizes.
Oh, he became evil. From this lovely blow. Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah. And I think because he's almost quite sort of clumsy and befuddled and everything before that, it just really the sort of, he's like a razor, you know, after he's that just comes across so beautifully. Brilliant to witness.
Now I'm gonna have to go look for that.
Well, there it's we are, fun. You see, we're all across
we
it.
Are.
We might
I
we
have
might
an
think
assignment.
Of what We might think about watch parties as being somewhat sort of bizarre, but in terms of obviously your social media, it's there. Rebecca, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, when we were talking about Shakespeare there, it made me want to ask whether anyone has a favourite play or novel or anything of that sort, either something they've studied that they really loved, you know, have forgotten about, or something that you've read recently, like anything at all. Do you have favourites? Anyone? Like, don't know who to go to first. Patricia, what's your one?
Well, I guess I would go back. I don't mean to be lazy, but As You Like It is one of my favorites. I also have loved, typically some super fun. It was Midsummer Night Dream. But King Lear, to me, I don't know. There are some themes in that. Themes in that are just really intense. And I
one of my favorites, definitely. Mm. Definitely one of mine.
Graham, favorite Shakespeare or favorite novel?
The favorite Shakespeare is Richard III, and it has to be Laurence Olivier. I love Laurence Olivier in the movie. It's the great, fantastic. Do you know, when I was young, Laurence Olivier to me was sort of passé, was so technical, blah. I didn't really rate him at all. As I grew older and watched, like The Entertainer, this man just knew something about acting. It was just stunning. And the opening sequence of Richard III, you cannot resist seeing the rest of that movie. Or, well, I saw the film. It's a brilliant performance.
See, I'd go for Alan Howard in Henry IV, Part One, but what the heck? Jessica Moses.
All good choices.
I liked Othello. I think that one's my favorite. I just think that the villains are so funny to me. I don't know, they're just so dramatic, and it just makes it really fun, even though it's a tragedy. But I remember in class, we had to read Macbeth, and like the students, we all had like different parts to read, and they made it so fun. Like they were like the three thieves or something, and like our classmates called them like thug bunnies, and they just gave them like goofy names and stuff. That made it really fun.
I love Macbeth as well. Yeah, that's another one. I played Lady Macbeth, that I loved all the other characters way more than my character.
As long as you can say out damn spot on a regular basis, that's all. You focus on the key thing there.
House cleaning.
Precisely. I have to mention, of course, Illyria, the novel by Armin Shimerman, all about Shakespeare and John Dee.
Oh, it's really good. Yes.
It is. Yeah,
it's really good. And it left me hanging, and I'm like, where's the second book? You know. Oh, it's so good.
Absolutely. We would definitely sort of promote that. And I would endorse that, Patricia. Absolutely spot on. As well as, of course, Pleasure Thresholds, the 2020 edition, which is available, of course, online as well from that point of view.
Thank you so much.
Katie, what about your favourite Shakespeare play or indeed novel?
It was Much Ado About Nothing, and I've got a bit of a Graham. I ended up going to see the David Tennant, Catherine Tate version in London when I lived down there.
Wow.
And it was amazing. It was so human and funny, and yeah, just it was just joyous. I went and was standing room only in the, with, you know, restricted view, and just loved every second of it.
Oh, brilliant.
It's like a groundling, standing and you're crowded and yeah, perfect.
Yeah, it's how it's
back in the day.
It's how it's meant to be. It's
Well, there's a virus that would say otherwise, Katie, but let's just step away from that now in these positive days. And you're not going to get much standing room in Hawaii unless you've obviously got one of those Zappa things to it from that point of view. And Rebecca, what's yours in terms of your response to this?
I think Shakespeare, definitely King Lear, I'd have to say. I do like the themes in that, and I think the storyline's fantastic. I just love it. And novel-wise, I know we've mainly been talking about Shakespeare, but I love Pride and Prejudice. I have about 6 copies or something like that, and I want to just, I just can't stop it. I just can't. I love them. I think they look pretty. I love the story. I love the characters. It's just always been one of my favourites since I was young. So,
is there something in particular about it that one place that really pings in your heart?
I think it's just the themes again. I think it's just, I think it's also the fact that I loved it as a child. There's just something that takes me back to like picking up a book as a kid and thinking, wow, like I love reading and just having that passion from a young age. I think it could purely be that. It's just something about picking up that particular book and being taken to, you know, just a nice place. And again, the themes I really like as well. So yeah, sometimes you can't explain it. I think sometimes you just have favorites and they're just favorites, aren't they?
That's so true. That is very true.
Yeah.
I know Sherlock Holmes, I read that book. I can't believe I read it so young. It terrified me. So many of you know the Hound of the Baskervilles and all of that. So mysterious. I have been obsessed with Sherlock Holmes my entire life.
We have got traveled from Hawaii through Babylon 5, through Sherlock Holmes, through HAL 9000 computers, through, of course, singing on radio when you're 2 years of age, and in course of King Lear, and of course, the scandalous world of Derek Jacobi. Patricia, have you had a recently interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been good for you?
Oh, thank you. It always is great. Thank you, Alex, for having me. Thank you, Katie and Rebecca and Jess and Graham. I'm just honored to meet you. So thank you.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
So the next critical question is, will you return, Patricia?
Of course. Not sure why you'd have me back, but yes, of course. I mean,
and Katie, how's it been back on the midweek drive after a gap of a number of years, obviously?
It's been absolutely wonderful. I have loved every minute of it. Thank you.
Excellent. And we look forward to seeing some of your artistic work as well from that point of view. Jessica and Rebecca, of course, seasoned pros, all set, of course, to pass on best wishes to Armin Schumann tomorrow, author of Illyria, when, of course, he does a double act with Arthur Weingarten and we go Shakespeare crazy. So I know, so it's amazing. and Graham, are you planning for your next Sound and Director's Vision with us?
Yes, we'll do it on Saturday. Yep.
It's all about Graham Harper, Jessica Burtis, Katie Dorr, and Rebecca Bond, and of course the awesome Patricia Tolman. Where I can actually say you might have the sunshine, Patricia, but we could look into the future because it's our future now. We're heading into obviously the next day, and you're going to have a splendid day because I think in Hawaii at present it's what, about 10:30 a.m. or 11.
That's right. Exactly.
It's going to be awesome.
What's the temperature?
It's 84.
Oh no! I want some.
I know. It's amazing.
And if they've got any sense, that you'll be signed up immediately for Magnum PI, the current series that's shooting there. So there we are. It's all important. There you go. Take care, Patricia Tolman, et al. Be well, be safe, be happy. Cheers there.
Bye all. Bye.
Bye.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Okay, so those of us who had the first vaccination, obviously booking in for the second vaccination, we get a card. We might manage to avoid actually putting a photograph of that card on social media. And of course, we've heard a great deal about vaccine certification and indeed getting life back to a form of normality, etc. Well, to talk about that now and more, we're delighted to welcome the director of the MyGP Ticket innovation, of course, for the wonderful world of cyberspace and more. It's the fabulous Hillary Cannon. How are you, Hillary?
Well, I'm infinitely better following that introduction. I don't remember the last time I was called the fabulous Hillary Cannon, but you may continue.
That's fantastic. Now, one of the things about this particular aspect is it's a way of actually producing proof, in essence, that we have been vaccinated, that we've gone through that process, and also getting back to that sense that we often talk about pre-pandemic life as it used to be.
That is the plan, yes. I mean, those wonderful little cards that you mentioned, I promptly lost mine. I have managed to hang on to my second one. I just got my second job last week, in fact, and I was incredibly excited. But, you know, they're not exactly fraud-proof. So what we've developed is just a way to kind of to have a much more secure, NHS-assured view into your, we actually work directly with the clinical system and the medical record. So we surface information that is present in the medical record. So it's a bit more difficult to Photoshop.
Now, My GP is the UK's largest independent healthcare management app. One of the questions that frequently gets asked when we start talking about apps in general, of course, Hillary, is how secure is it? Now, you might sort of think, of course it's secure. Do you think I'd be on this program today if it wasn't secure? But it is a fear. I can recall just a year ago, people were panicking about Zoom because they thought, what about Zoom bombing? What about, you know, emergencies of all sorts of things happening on Zoom, et cetera. So there is understandably that concern about cybercrime, cyber fraud, and so on. What assurances can you provide about this particular app?
Of course. I mean, listen, anyone who has questions about our suitability to do this is welcome to check the NHS website. We are listed on their list of approved suppliers for online services. How our app works is we effectively, I imagine us as a window blind. This is how I explain it. And so ordinarily those windows are drawn closed over the patient's medical record. And we kind of lift the blinds and allow a patient to view what's in their medical record. And when they close the app, that blind closes too. What we've done with this particular feature is because we recognize people may want or indeed need to show whether or not they had been vaccinated, they may not want to show the entirety of their medical record. So we reach in, we look for just the information relating to the second jab of your COVID vaccine. We add 12 days onto that. And if both of those criteria have been met, then we isolate that information in the separate bit of the app to give patients that added level of privacy. Now we do, in order to make this work in if you're offline or if there's some system failure somewhere, we do store that one piece of information, but otherwise we store no personal medical records. We are a window blind up and down for the entirety of the medical record, and we have got full NHS assurance to do so.
Now, obviously, My GP is also in discussions with Harlequins Rugby Club about a possible pilot of the combined My GP ticket v health solution. Is this something which is going to be a temporary fix, or do you think it's going to be a kind of recognised way? Because, again, there are lots of folk who would actually balk at the idea of having to have this sort of system there. And also from the technical side of things that, you know, even in my own sort of case, I can't say that this is a current phone that actually works on that system. There are sort of data issues or indeed issues with respect to out-of-date technology and so on, where you think, but it doesn't work on this system.
Yeah. So what we've done, one of the reasons we've partnered with VHealth, and they're fabulous, and they have not been involved in the solution that we launched today. Today is just the vaccine stuff, but we are working with VHealth to bring together a more comprehensive solution. So first of all, there's the issue of discrimination. We understand that there are people who can't or for their own reasons won't be vaccinated. They still want to get back to normal life just like everyone else. So the VHealth team brings together test results with our vaccination proof and should provide a more complete solution. But what they also do, and one of the reasons that I loved these guys straight away when I met them and really was keen to work with them, is that they help with that access issue. So once you have gone through the registration process and you know you've got your test results or your vaccine or whatever, if you don't want or have a smartphone that you want to carry with you, or maybe you've got a bit old technology on it, you can actually print out your certificate and carry it with you. And the reason that that is not falsifiable is that it contains a proprietary code called a V-code, which was invented by the team at VHealth and is a unique personal identifier. The thing about QR codes and barcodes is sort of antiquated technology, and it's very, very easy to forge. Whereas these V-codes are a brand new thing. They're owned by this company, and so they are incredibly difficult to falsify. So we've got another layer of security with the use of the V-codes. And again, it solves that access issue that you were mentioning, in that you could print out your certification if you needed it. And wherever you want to go can still scan that code from a piece of paper as easily as they can from a smartphone.
Perhaps it's indicative of the society in which we live that we have to get used to multi-factor authentication. I know it's often the bane of my life that actually I think this very day I've had about four different codes for different sort of aspects where I've had to sort of work through that. Do you think we're ever going to get to a stage, Hillary, where it actually becomes slightly easier that, I don't know, voice recognition pattern software, optics could actually be used to actually identify that? Or is that just another step beyond at present?
Well, I hope so. I mean, look, what we used... On the MyGP app, in order to get access to your medical records, obviously we have to be sure it's you. And so we use NHS login assurance, identification assurance, and they use facial recognition technology, I believe, in their identification process. So that's the thing. I don't know in terms of how widespread or how much easier it's going to get, but I certainly hope it will. I can tell you that if it does, we will be looking to bring it on the MyGP app.
Which is the concluding session, basically, Hillary. How can people actually find out more about the MyGP app and so on?
Well, the MyGP app is available on all your app stores, whether it be Apple or Android. The MyGP ticket features currently only on the iOS version, so it's only in the App Store. The Android version is coming in the next week or so. And if people want information about the solution, the security behind it, and all of the other things, they can go to mygp.com/ticket.
Makes perfect sense, and good to see that the feline producer in the background there was obviously just sort of saying, right, that's it, we've got the plug there, sorted through. I think you should actually give your kitty friend a name check, please. The name is?
That is Fiorello, and he is an absolute terrorist. My partner has failed in his duties of keeping him quiet.
Not at all. Fiorello, we appreciate that. Two final questions for you, Hillary. Have you had a recently interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Have I had a what?
A reasonably interesting Zoomer with us. It's a kind of customer satisfaction thing.
Has it been okay for you? Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, Alex. Thank you.
Well, the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us apprised of all the things that MyGP is actually getting up to?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd absolutely love to. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
As creatures on the planet Earth, we've known for quite some time that actually being out and about is just as good as actually getting exercise indoors as well in so many ways. In fact, it's better because lots of surveys actually prove that with all sorts of things, our mental health improves and indeed our general well-being improves. This can also tie in with vitamin D. And if we're speaking about vitamin D and Yakult in particular, who better than ace nutritionist Louise Durrant to actually talk us through the importance of indeed getting out and about for our well-being, our health, our general fitness. As mentioned, Louise Durrant, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute delight, always, Louise. Now, in terms of this particular survey, some interesting facts, which is kind of common sense, really, that actually being out and about is good for us. And getting that sort of balance there, it helps us sort of manufacture our own vitamin D, but you can also help that as well.
Yes. So it's the outdoor space has a lot more benefits than just the nutritional benefits around getting our vitamin D that obviously I kind of specialize in and know a lot about. But we also know that there's benefits in terms of kind of your creativity, keeping your stress levels low, and like you mentioned, just improving your general physical health as well.
I was particularly intrigued by the whole notion of improving puzzle solving and techniques to actually improve our puzzle solving. That's a kind of unexpected bonus, isn't it?
Yes. So this is a really interesting study. Well, there's been a few, but one that I found really interesting from about 2012 that looked at two groups of people. One had just been out on a hike for sort of 4 to 6 days, lots of outdoor exposure, and the others hadn't been on that experience. And those who'd been out hiking could perform about 50% better on kind of these creativity and puzzle solving tasks that they were given. And it's thought that just being outdoors in that outdoor space gives something called our selective attention, the ability to kind of reboost itself. So when we're indoors and we're on watching the TV all the time or on computers and on our phones and video games and those sorts of things, our attention is really required all the time. We have to respond to things and change tasks. But when we're outdoors, we get a break from all of that. So we get the opportunity to kind of give our attention a break. So then when we are given a task to do, we've got more ability to do it.
And is it that kind of line that a change can almost be as good as a rest that actually is important? I mean, here we are doing a Zoom call. We're all doing a whole range of other factors as well. It is a case of getting that balance and variety in our experiences.
Yes, absolutely. Having a break from everything is really important. But the fact of being outdoors to have that break brings in a bit more. So not just in terms of our puzzle solving and our creativity, but also, like we mentioned at the beginning, being outdoors in the summer months, the spring and summer months, with our skin exposed to sunlight helps us to make some vitamin D, which is really important for our health as well.
Other bonuses include, of course, a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity. I mean, these are all kind of absolute essentials, really, in terms of us keeping ourselves and our quality of life going, really.
Yes. So getting outdoors, we tend to be a little bit more active when we're outdoors. You know, the physical act of going outdoors normally means we walk out of our front door. And just being outdoors, you're a bit more active. And that in itself will start to have the benefits in terms of reducing your risk of diseases. But building up on our vitamin D levels is what really one of the unique benefits of sunlight when it comes to our nutrition side of things. So it's really important for our bone health and our general immune function as well. And there aren't many dietary sources of vitamin D. So we get it from some things like oily fish, red meat, liver and eggs. But you can't really get your daily dose from diet alone most of the time. So we need to get outdoors and get a little bit of sun exposure to get our vitamin D levels. Mm. But there are some people that obviously won't be able to go outdoors because they're working all day long, or they are stuck indoors if they're in hospital or in a care home, for example. And so then you need to think about kind of other dietary sources. So perhaps supplements, but also there's things called fortified foods. So these are things that have had vitamin D added in the manufacturing. It's normally on the label of the product. So you'll get it in things like breakfast cereals and dairy products, and Yakult Light have it added into their product as well. So there are products out there that have vitamin D added into them as an alternative way to think about it if you struggle to get outdoors because of work limitations and things like that.
I was intrigued that even if we actually head up to the height of the British summer, so to speak, it's interesting that there are some people who actually still need around about 25 to 40 minutes of skin exposure to make enough vitamin D for the day. And sometimes that isn't possible. And also, let's be honest, you know, in Britain, we might not get that amount of sun that's coming through at any particular time.
Yes. So the amount of sun exposure you need to make vitamin D really varies from person to person. But one of the big factors that drives it is skin tone. So if you have quite pale skin, it can be as little as 9 minutes of sun exposure that you need to get your daily dose. Whereas if you have much darker skin, it can be towards sort of the 20 plus minutes that you'll need to make your vitamin D. And it's obviously quite hard to know that. And we still need to follow kind of safe sun exposure because of risk of cancer. But really, you just don't want to be out there long enough to turn your skin red or for your skin to get warm to touch either. So that's just something important to remember. Mm.
Now, we've spoken before, Louise, about obviously your fascination with vitamin D in particular, and how obviously that's your specialist subject in so many ways. The efficacy of vitamin D2 and D3 on raising vitamin D status across the globe, all of those kind of things very much important to the whole system. Just out of interest, why vitamin D as opposed to B, C, or indeed vitamin A?
Well, vitamin D is actually one of the few dietary or nutrients and vitamins and minerals that it's hard to get enough of from diet alone. So you have to think of some other strategies. Food companies need to think of strategies for bringing it in. The government need to think of strategies for how to make sure people are getting enough. So we have a deficiency problem in the UK and around the world. There's a large proportion of people that are deficient in vitamin D. And you don't really know about it until it's too late. So until you suffer from rickets as children or osteomalacia, which is kind of bone pain and bone weakening as an adult. And by then you've probably been deficient for quite a long time. So I got really interested because I wanted to raise the profile of vitamin D so that everyone knows and understand it's important before it's too late for them, really.
Yeah, prevention being better than cure. So obviously Yakult Light, one of those wonderful food products that is enriched with vitamin D. Where can people actually go to, Louise, to actually find out further details about either Yakult Light or indeed your work on vitamin D?
Yeah, so if they head to the Yakult website, which is yakult.co.uk, there they'll find all the information about the Yakult products and the vitamin D in there. The nhs.uk website also has some good information. that vitamin D generally. And then the Yakult products are available in most major supermarkets as well. So people should be able to have a look at the packaging to understand more about the vitamin D added there.
Dr. Louise Durrant, nutritionist extraordinaire, indeed, dietitian extraordinaire. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and stay healthy.
You too. Thanks for having me.